ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today's Srimad Bhagavatam class from the 7th canto, 11th chapter, entitled The Perfect Society, Four Social Classes, is text 31. So we will go first word by word with the translation so that when we chant the verse we have an idea of what we're saying.
Prayasvabhavihito 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 Nirnam dharmo yuge yuge Nirnam dharmo yuge yuge Nirnam dharmo yuge yuge Veda ridhi smrita rajan Vitadriddhi smrito rajan Vitadriddhi smrito rajan Kritya cheha cha smasharma krit Kritya cheha cha sharma krit Kritya cheha cha sharma krit
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear King, Brahmanas, well conversant in Vedic knowledge, have given their verdict that in every age, yuga, the conduct of different sections of people according to their material modes of nature is auspicious, both in this life and after death. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 3:35, it is said, Shrayan Swadharmo Viguna Paradamat Shanustititat. It is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties, even though they may be faulty, than another's duties. The Antyajas, the men of the lower classes, are accustomed to stealing, drinking, and illicit sex, but that is not considered sinful. For example, if a tiger kills a man, this is not sinful, but if a man kills another man, this is considered sinful, and the killer is hanged. What is a daily affair among the animals is a sinful act in human society. Thus, according to the symptoms of higher and lower sections of society, there are different varieties of occupational duties. According to the experts in Vedic knowledge, these duties are prescribed in terms of the age concerned. Reading in this particular section is very direct instructions. It's like a blueprint for the human race who wants to elevate themselves, who wants to actually fulfill the purport of being a human being. And in this particular verse, and also in the previous one, there was some distinction made between the different classes of persons according to the material modes of nature. So while it is saying in both the purports, it is saying that these lower classes of persons are accustomed to certain sinful activities such as stealing, drinking, or intoxications, and are illicit sex, because of the modes of nature that they're surrounded by, because of their lack of fulfilling consciousness, that actually these activities, according to that standard, are not sinful. So this isn't telling us that these activities are not sinful. Actually, they are sinful activities. But according to one's placement in life, according to one's covering by the modes of material nature, according to one who has not entered the path of enlightenment or self-realization, then these activities are of lesser consequence. One of our primary pillars are, as Maharaj was last night speaking about foundation, he was quoting Jesus Christ saying, do not build your home on shifting sands. And in his purport explaining in the same way, our spiritual life should be built with very firm, strong foundation. Otherwise, just like a home built on shifting sands is easily destroyed during some great calamity, such as hurricanes or great storms, in the same way, if our spiritual life is not firmly implanted, based on very firm foundations, when there is any confrontation coming from within or without, from within by our own mind, senses, and desires, and without by either the activities of other people, by the activities of nature itself, so many disturbances and distractions, then one who is not firmly grounded in their spiritual life is easily toppled or easily falls from the path. So we may have come, many of us, from these lower classes. In fact, in the age of Kali, it is very unusual if somebody is not coming from a lower class. Even those who come from so-called aristocratic families, they're by nature lower class, and their activities are even lower class. Because as was pointed out in yesterday's very eloquent Bhagavatam class, in Kali Yuga, everything is topsy-turvy. There is no, we have a saying, no good deed goes unturned. Even if you try to do something good in Kali Yuga, it will be destroyed by others or by the surrounding situation. It is very difficult even to do good works in this day and age. So we have to pay particular attention. So our pillars of the beginning pillars that Prabhupada established in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling. This is our like basic foundation. And Prabhupada said, even by following these regulative principles, you do not become a devotee. For an example, you could, you know, even some birds, he would give the example of a pigeon, even a pigeon is vegetarian. So sometimes it is seen, especially nowadays, where there is many social and moral and so-called ethical type of organizations aimed at instituting vegetarianism or instituting other forms of good behavior. But unless and until these activities are connected to Krishna, the Supreme Lord, these activities in and of themselves have no merit. They have no consequence. Although certainly it is preferable that one establishes himself in a higher principle of behavior. So we take these four foundational prohibitions to begin our spiritual life. Because one cannot practice spiritual life if they're indulging in these particular activities. And even so, we may see that people, particularly when they first come, maybe coming here to the temple, and because of their conditioning, they are, as it's saying here, maybe they are stealing, maybe they are taking intoxication, maybe they are having illicit sex, but somehow or other, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Sankirtan movement, they have heard the holy name, or they have tasted prasadam, or they have met a devotee, and they have gained some attraction, and they have come to the temple. So they haven't come immediately with an idea to give up their sinful life, but there is some attraction. So the devotees, once they finally take to spiritual life and they understand, if I'm going to be somewhat serious, then I have to give these things up. But in the beginning, there is some tolerance, there is some understanding, so that the person's taste can become assured. Srila Prabhupada was writing to one disciple who relapsed into some bad behavior. So, in two ways, he wanted to balance. He wanted to correct that disciple's mentality by establishing, actually he called the behavior abominable behavior. I don't know why you have taken to this abominable behavior. But on the other hand, to encourage him and not to completely, you know, push him away, he had to be truthful, it's abominable behavior. But still, because you have had some association with Krishna and his devotees and have chanted his holy name and performed devotional service, still, Krishna, he will accept you if you correct yourself. So there's no doubt that abominable behavior is part of the fallen conditioned life. But there is no doubt, in order to make spiritual advancement, that we have to give it up. And at the same time, there's no doubt, in order to attract the conditioned souls who are just right outside the door and even among us and in our own hearts, we have to have some tolerance and understanding that it may not be immediately possible. And in the same way, we have to try to find some means to attract these people, to get them to come to the platform of having a good foundation for their spiritual life. And in order for us to be effective in our preaching, it means we ourselves have to have that same strong foundation within our own lives. So we want to distinguish ourselves from the animalistic activities. As Prabhupada said, the daily affair among the animals, it's common, it's ordinary. The animal can kill the tiger can kill a man. There's no sin involved. But if a man comes and he kills another man, this is a sinful activity. So we have to have that understanding between what is sinful activity for the human being and what is not sinful activity for the human being who is acting on the lower level, like such as an animal. And then we should desire to elevate ourselves from that platform. And the last sentence is that the duties are prescribed in terms of the age concerned. So I have to say, I wasn't sure whether the age concerned meant could mean the age of the individual. Obviously, a younger child would not have the same prescribed duties as a more advanced person in age, or whether they're speaking in terms of the age concerned, such as Kali Yuga, or one of the other yugas. So I'm assuming that they meant the former. So in Kali Yuga, there is more leeway because we are not able to perform the austerities that were quite normal for the other ages. We're not living in an age of peacefulness and prosperity. We're not living in an age of enlightenment. So therefore, with all of that considered, the Yuga Dharma for this age, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, is the rightful prescription. And we should not be hesitant to give out this prescription freely, to invite others to take this medicine daily. It is a very great thing. And it is one that can actually benefit this entire universe, what to speak of ourselves, those around us, and the planet. Srila Prabhupada often said, even a child, even a dog can take part. So we have today the disappearance day of Sripad Ramanuja Acharya. And I wanted to say just a few words about him, which is a little hard because in many cases of our previous acharyas, There's not so much written, not so much to find, just maybe a few sentences, few paragraphs, but Ramanujacharya has volumes. He was such an extraordinary personality. So I was trying to condense a few things that could mention in glorification and in remembrance of Ramanujacharya on this particular day. And in looking through the different activities of his life, I could see that he was such an enlightened person, just like we have in our own disciplic succession, that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was such an enlightened Acharya. He meaning had great vision for the future, great compassion for the moment, great compassion for the future. And he was fearless in his preaching. So we find the same type of personality in Ramanujacharya. So he took his appearance in the year 1117 of the Chaitanya era, and he was considered to be one of the most important philosophers and saints of Sri Vaishnavism, as well as one of the most dynamic characters in all of Hinduism, that he was philosophical as well as a social reformer, and he was very influential in what we can call Hindu religious history. He personally revitalized the Indian philosophy and the popular religion of the time, so that even today, every aspect of Hinduism is actually influenced by his work. And his life showed a very unique personality. He was combining very contemplative insight and logic. He was a very charismatic personality. And he was selflessly dedicated to the Lord. And this began at a very young age. He was born Ilaya Paramal. And he was born to Keshava Paramal Somaijaji Dikshitor and Kanti Mata Amal at Sri Purumpudar. So it's said that just as the sage Vashishta, upon seeing the brilliant face of the child, he named him Lakshman. And he was saying, Lakshmano Lakshmi Sampanaha. So Periya Tiru Malai Nambi was struck by the tejas, or the effulgence, the aura of this child, and he named him Lakshmana. He named him after Lakshmana as Ilaya Perumal. In other words, Ilayal War. So there's a shlok in the Yadavachala Mahatmya in which it says that the same one who was first Adishesha, so the Adishesha, first Lakshmana, thereafter, and then thirdly as Balaram, is born as Sri Ramanuja in the Kali Yuga. So this is taken by the Purava Acharyas to mean Sri Ramanuja Acharya. And there is some conflict, like always when we get these date of births from long, long ago, some authorities will say one and then the other, etc. But the most agreement is that he was coming in the Kali Yuga year 4119, which corresponds to the Christian calendar of 1017. And he was born on the Sukla Paksha Panchami on a Friday. So in the Vrida Padma Purana, there is a passage that states that long, long afterwards, the Lord himself will come to the earth as a Tridanda sannyasi to restore good law. And at that time, heretics and men of perverted intellects will have confused the mind of people. In other words, peoples will not be in a good mental, spiritual condition. And these same people will be presenting the shastras from a very clever way, which will clever in that they will speak and present things very attractively, and it will almost sound like the real thing, except that it won't be. Just like you can mistake sugar from salt, only by tasting will you know for sure. So it's looking and sounding quite the same, but it is actually, there is some tinge, and then the effect will be it'll turn men's heart away from Vishnu and cause them to forget his glory. So this glorious incarnation, through the good fortune of the Lord's devotees, will come down on the earth to explain and amplify the teachings of the great sage Bharatanarayan and the divine singer of the Gita. And the Holy One, then they gave some hint how we could tell this person. He said, the Holy One will compose a bhashya on the Vyasa Sutras, and this bhashya will save men from the confusion and despair caused by these other spurious doctrines, and will direct them and lead them to the true faith. So while Ramanuja was still a boy, he lost his father, and he was living with his mother in Kanchipuram under the protection of one Tiru Kanchi Nambi. And it's said that this particular Nambi was conversing or on speaking terms with Lord Vadaraj in his Archivigraha form. So I'll give a few little examples from the events in his life. Again, so numerous it would take half the day just to discuss the wonderful activities of Ramanujacharya, and we'll do just in a few minutes here. So when he was 16 years of age, he had mastered all the Vedas and the Shastras. And then at the age of 17, he married Rakshakambo. Now, this can, keeping that in mind, you will see by some of the other things that he began his ascension at a very young age, his ascension in spiritual life. Ilaya Paramo was placed under the Advaitic sannyasi called Yadava Prakasha at Tiruput Kunzi for training in Vedanta. So this meant the person was a Shaivite. And at one point, the Alavandar was desiring to nominate Ilaya Paramo to succeed him. And he visited Tirupat Kuzi to meet him, but somehow or other the opportunity did not present himself. So then the Alavandar, he had to return to Sri Sangam. Now, many occasions arose when there was great conflict between Ilaya Paramo and the Shaivite guru. And, of course, we understand as disciples we're supposed to accept everything Sri Gurudev speaks. But, of course, that is providing, Sri Gurudev is speaking the absolute truth. In other words, providing he's a bona fide guru. So this particular guru, he was giving some misinterpretations on the Vedantic statements. And Ilaya Paramo, although he was the student addressing his guru, he was fearless in pointing out the errors in the interpretation of the guru, and he actually corrected him. And this enraged the guru. He was very angry. And so he was thinking that if it goes on like this, Ilaya Paramo will one day demolish the Advaita philosophy. So, and thinking of his own position, if that Advaita philosophy is demolished, then I won't be the guru anymore. So he made a plot to kill him by drowning him in the Ganga while on a pilgrimage on the country with his disciples. Now, so it's amazing, sometimes we're looking at, troubles within our own society when, devotees do certain things that are not up to standard. But we can see that this type of behavior is there from time immemorial. As long as there is some speck of untruth existing in the heart of the conditioned person, even one may be a so-called guru, but you can just see he's plotting to kill his own student. So one other disciple learned about this. His name was Govinda, and he was related somehow to Ilaya Paramo, and he alerted him. So in the dead of the night, it was totally dark. In one account that I read, it said there was no moon. Like, even at night, if there's a moon, you can kind of see your way around. But when there's no moon, you can't see anything. It's very confusing, especially in a forest. I recently had an experience. I live in a little cottage slightly on a hill by the lake in New Vrindavan. It's like 5 minutes walk from the temple. And then there's a little road across the road. There's a little more forest, and up the hill there's another devotee who's living. And then right behind him, a little bit up, is another hill. And all of this is up across from Prabhupada's palace. And this is where His Holiness Varsana Swami lives. So one day there was a nice program going to be at his house. And I thought, why should I take my car all the way around, which is how the road is, to go to a home which is just over the hill from where I live? I'll just walk there. And there was kind of a little path, and I could see it quite clearly. And so I went. But then the program was going on, and it became very dark. And there was a little bit of light, and I started to walk back. But all of a sudden, I couldn't see the path, and each tree looked like the other tree. And even though I knew I was just over the hill, I was completely lost. And when I finally came out of the little piece of forest, I was completely away from where I should have been, you know. So here he was in the dead of night, no moon to guide where he was going to go. And in addition, he hadn't even been there before. So he had no kind of landmarks to go to guide him. So miraculously, a hunter and his wife appeared and they guided him. And he was in a trance at the time. So when he opened his eyes, he found himself on the outskirts of Kanchipuram. And then the couple disappeared. At that time, then, he came to realize that it was actually Lord Vadaraj and Perundevi Tayur who had come in the guise of a hunter couple. That the Lord had come to lead him out of that situation. So he stayed at Kanchi for some time to assist here at Kanchinambi in his daily service to Lord Vadaraj. So then news came that the Alvandar was very sick and he desired to meet Elia Paramal. So just as they came, to the place, just as Tirukinambi and Alvandar arrived, they saw the funeral procession of the Alvandar. In other words, he'd passed away before they could meet. So during the last rites, they noticed that the three fingers of the Alvandar remained folded. No, they were like down. And this signified that his last three unfulfilled wishes. So at that time, Elia Paramal swore that he would write a commentary on the Veda Vyas Brahma Sutta, and two, that he would perpetuate the memory of Vyasadev and Parasara, and that he would strive to propagate the Vaishishta Dvaita on the lines of the 4,000 holy collects of the Alwars. And one by one, he made this vow, and one by one the fingers were unfolding into the normal position, and that signified that this was actually so. And at that time, since he wasn't able to meet the Alvandar, he returned to Kanchi without even going into the temple of Srirangam. So later, this Tirukachinambi, he obtained directly from Lord Varadraj the famous six words, and he passed them on to Ramanujacharya, Ilaiwar. And the six words provided the guidelines for him to follow. And they were, one, that the Lord Narayan is the Paramatma. Two, that the individual souls are different from the Paramatma. And three, that Prapati is the means to salvation. And four, this is kind of interesting, and I don't have any purport, said that the last remembrance of the Lord and the part of the departing soul is not necessary. Five, that moksha or liberation can be attained only by laying off the mortal coils, in other words, leaving the body. And that Elia Paramal should take refuge at the feet of Periyanambi. So then he met with Periyanambi, at Madhurakantam, and under the shade of a Vakula tree, Pariyanambi performed the Pancha Samskara to him. So this is all going on when he's still very young. He married at 17, right? So maybe he's like 18 or 19 years old. Young man. So by all accounts, his marriage was not a happy marriage, because his wife could not understand who he was. She could not understand his greatness or his strict behavior. And she would always act kind of on her own wavelength, separate from him. So there was like no compatibility. And there were several instances where she just, you know, asserted herself and was very disruptive. And she didn't show respect toward the Bhagavatas, to the other saintly persons. So this was not very pleasing to Ilaiwar. So when he was 30 years of age, so he married at 17, now he's 30, he took sannyas. And this is when he took the name Ramanujamuni. And he was considered the king among sannyasis. And therefore he was known as Yati Rajar, or the king of the sannyasis. So during this time, the seat of the acharya at Srirangam was still lying vacant, without a successor. And Ramanuja Acharya was requested to please take on this charge. But before doing so, he wanted to equip himself with the secrets of the three great mantras. And for this purpose, he approached one Tirukoshitur Nambi. And this Tirukoshitur Nambi, he made him come several times to him before instructing him. In other words, as is proper, when one wants to approach a guru, one should study the guru, and the guru should study the prospective disciple. So he made him come several times. And then he cautioned Ramanuja he should not give the secrets to one and all, and if he did so, he would go to hell. So we're all familiar with what he did, that he, upon receiving the instructions, he immediately went to the top of the steeple of the temple, and he proclaimed to the large gathering of his disciples assembled there the purport of the instruction. So sometimes it's said that he actually gave these secret mantras. But in other renditions, this is disclaimed, that he did not give the secret mantras. He actually gave out that he had found the way to attain moksha or liberation through these three mantras. And then he invited all those who were sincere to follow him and get initiated. Now at that time, he already had a very large following. And these were the people mainly who he was speaking to. And they were gathered there. And so at the same time, it was causing confusion. And the guru, the Koshitur Nambi, was very angry with him. But Ramanuja told him that actually, he didn't really say the mantra, but even so, nonetheless, that only he would go to hell. And these people, this multitude of humanity who had listened to him, this was their clarion, their wake-up call, and they would be saved spiritually. So he didn't mind going to hell. And the guru was really overwhelmed by this response. So he embraced Ramanuja. And in embracing him, he called him Empuramanar, Empuramanar, oh my Lord, oh my Lord. And he declared that from that point thereon, Sri Vaishnavism would be known as Ramanuja Darshanam, or the light of Ramanuja. So, what is the time the class is supposed to be over? Okay, a few more minutes here. At another time, he visited Saraswati Pritim, and the goddess Saraswati was so impressed with his commentary on the Brahma Sutram that she named it Sri Vaishyam. And this conferred upon him the title of Vaishya Karar. So the commentary of Ramanuja is always referred to with the honorific Sri, and therefore this was known as Sri Vaishyam. Because his greatest work is a commentary on the Vedavyas Brahma Sutram, and a simpler commentary was called the Veda Saram. So there was one disciple, Kuresham, who was very helpful in publishing his works. And in this way, the first promise to the Avandar was fulfilled by this publication of the Vedavyas Brahma Sutram and the Veda Saram. And the same Kuresham also wrote many famous stavas himself. So then Ramanuja asked Kurusham to name his two sons after Vedavyas and Parasara. And in this way, he fulfilled the second promise to the Alvandar. And then it was this Parasara Vata who subsequently wrote the famous commentary on Vishnu Sahasranam that was ordained by Ramanuja. Now there was one other disciple of Ramanuja, and his name was Kilan. And once Ramanuja, he was alone, he was mentally reciting a particular hymn of the Tiru Voi Mohozi. And in this state, when he was alone in mental meditation, this Kilan entered the room, and he very gently inquired if he was meditating on that particular hymn. And it was, in fact, the one that Ramanuja was meditating on. So then he understood that this Pilan was the best person suited to write a commentary on the Tiru Vohi Moji. And he ordered him to do that. And at that point, he wrote the Ara Yara Padi. And this was the fulfillment of the third promise to the Alvandar. Now, there's one other incident where there was a Kulatunga Chola. And this Kulatunga Chola, very powerful personality, he was also a king of some sort, and he was a staunch devotee of Lord Shiva. So he commanded Ramanuja to come to his court, and his idea was he wanted Ramanuja to establish the superiority of Shiva over all other deities, including Vishnu. And if the support was not forthcoming, this king was planning to kill Ramanuja. So this Kuresh, who was such a dedicated, sincere disciple, he sensed the danger. So I don't think he even told Ramanuja about this. He went disguised as Ramanuja, along with another disciple called Periyanambi. And so he went into the court, disguised as Ramanuja with this other disciple, and the king ordered him to sign a document to the effect that Shiva is the greatest. So Kuresha, he adds, Shivam, no doubt using Shivam, was no doubt great, but Dronam was greater than Shivam. So it was a little play on words, because both of these words, Shivam and Dronam, are expressions referring to units of measure. So when the king saw that, he got very enraged. You know, people who are influenced by the lower modes of material nature, when they don't get their way, they're easily enraged. This is, you know, a symptom of that type of conditioning. So he ordered both of these men to be blinded. And when he came to know that, the Kurusha was actually not Ramanuja, when he understood that he was only impersonating. So Kurusha was blinded, but the Periyanambi, the other disciple, was actually killed. And Kurusha, even though he was blind, he was completely blissfully happy, because he felt so happy that he was able to save Ramanuja. Now the same Kulatunga is reported to have taken a deity of Govinda and thrown it into the sea. And this was the deity that Ramanuja recovered and installed at Tirupati. So this Kulatunga was a very unfortunate person. One time when Ramanuja was traveling, he noticed an officer, he was some like officer of state, but the person was very handsome. And he had a very beautiful, well, some say wife and some say it was just maybe, you know, a female associate, whatever. But she was very beautiful also. And this person, Dhanur, his name was Dhanur Das, he was just walking along the banks of the Kaveri River, totally enamored by this woman, looking into her eyes. He didn't see anything around him. And Ramanuja took compassion on the man because he could see what a foolish individual. He was so captivated by the temporary beauty of a woman's eyes. And so he said, I will show you something even more beautiful. So being a materialistic person, of course, yeah, I am interested. If you come with me, I will show you something even more beautiful than her eyes. So he took him into the temple of Lord Ranganath. And this person, because he was in the company of Ramanuja, he became enraptured by the charm of the Lord. And he became a disciple of Ramanuja, and he assumed the name Urangavilidasar. Urangavilidasar. So this shows how Ramanuja, he never entertained any caste distinctions, and he conferred his benedictions even on very lowly persons or very fallen persons. Very compassionate. Just like Srila Prabhupada. He was very compassionate. So many of us were so degraded and so fallen. And Srila Prabhupada so compassionately handed us the medicine. Please take it. This is all I have brought. Please take it and give us the holy name. One time Ramanuja arranged to have a deity of him, of his own self made. And once the deity was made, he actually embraced this deity. And by doing so, he invested the deity with his own powers, and he had that deity installed at Tirumala in Tirupati. On another occasion, he met a Jain king. And the Jain king had a beautiful young daughter, but the daughter was possessed by some kind of malevolent demon. And nobody had been able to free her from this, you know, from this possession. So Ramanuja took water consecrated by the dust of his lotus feet, and he sprinkled it on this girl, and she was immediately cured. And so the king was so grateful that he begged to become a disciple, the sishya of Ramanuja, and Ramanuja agreed, and he named him Vishnu Vardhana. So he departed in 1137 under auspicious circumstances. And his physical body is preserved in a sitting, you know, full upright posture, at the Sanniti or the sanctorum dedicated to him in Sri Rangam Temple. And this was ordered by Lord Ranganath himself. So it's said that not all the Sri Vaishnavas are aware of this phenomena, that in the Bukola, the Bhuloka Vaikuntham, the heaven and earth, in the inner sanctions of Sri Rangam, that the preserved body of Ramanuja Acharya is still in a very pristine state, without any publicity or without any preservatives. Like in Egypt, they will preserve the mummies with all kinds of herbal extracts. And then I think there's some saint in Goa, some Christian saint, they have also preserved that person. But again, by using some kind of chemicals. But it is said that there is no herbal or chemical interaction, and that it's just by the desire and purity of Ramanuja himself that he is still remaining there in that preserved condition. Small point that Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, in his Vani Vaibhava, he makes a statement to show how Sripad Ramanuja fits into the overplan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's a very interesting story how he came to assist in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And also in the Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, it sheds the view of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas upon the mission and pastimes of Lord Ramanuja. So, just to tell really quickly, because now the time is up, just there was one other occasion when, this is a very well-known pastime, but one other occasion, somebody asked Ramanuja that, who's more attached, the householders or the Krishna conscious householder or the sannyasis in the mutt? So Ramanuja devised a very clever way to tell the truth. And it said that night that he entered with a few of his close associates, he entered into one of his householders' homes. And this is a very renounced householder. Prabhupada has explained that, householders, if they are completely dedicated to the service of the Lord, are to be considered like sannyasis. So he entered their home and he began to clean out everything. And then he saw the lady, she was sleeping, and he saw her gold earrings and her Mangala Sutra, which, you know, made with gold. This is what the married ladies put on their net. So he began to take her earrings and this Mangala, he took the Mangala Sutra and he starts to take the earrings. And at this point, the husband saw what was going on and he remained lying very still. But the wife became a little, you know, she sensed something was happening and that someone was there, and she let out a scream, and the transcendental thief disappeared. And then the husband said to my wife, "Why did you disturb? That was our guru, Dave. He had a higher plan. Certainly he had a higher plan. You should have rolled over to allow him to take the other earring." So can you imagine, you know, this is that, what a high-minded individual. What a surrendered soul. Anyway, Ramanuja, he heard about this response, so then he made his next plan, and he told one disciple to go to the mutt where the sannyasis were living and take their cloth and hide it. So when the disciple went to the ashram, and when all the sannyasis were at the Sri Vasya class, this disciple began to take parts of their kopins, and he tore strips from their dhotis, and in general, just made a mess of things, swapping their kopins and hiding them. And so when they all came back and they saw, "Hey, where's my kopin? Who's torn my vesti? Where's this? Where's that? And where's my Angavastra? Who has stolen it?" And they started fighting among themselves. So no need of purport here. So before leaving his body, Ramanuja gave 74 final instructions, and they all were concerned with serving the Vaishnavas. For example, one should feed the Vaishnavas very nice preparations and make them so happy that they will smile. I have to say, that's wonderful. And here I have to say, coming to Radha Gopinath temple, it is like that. There's that mood that, you know, I came in very, very late, not last night, but the previous night. And nice prasadam was offered, you know, nice room was offered. So make nice preparations, make them so happy that they smile. And one should massage their legs until they fall asleep, meaning the Vaishnav, not the massager. Anyway, just thought I should mention that. And that, you know, if somebody's leaving, you should walk to the end of the village and then go 9 steps beyond, you know. So anyway, these were some of his instructions. But his main instructions were 2 in number: surrender to the Guru and serve the Vaishnavas. So Sri Ramanuja Acharya Ki Jai. So anyway, I'm a little late. I beg your forgiveness for that. And if anybody wants to say anything, or probably all you all want to go to breakfast. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir Ki Jai.